So good afternoon, everybody. Welcome to this afternoon's session, Survive Disruption Through Workflow Automation and Process Excellence. And now I'm assuming, because you made the long haul all the way down here, that you're actually committed to workflow and process automation. If you're not, it's an awful long journey to make to listen to me talk for an hour or so. With that, I'll get started. So for those of you who don't know me, my name is Ryan Duguid. I'm the VP of Product at Nintex. Now, just before I start, show of hands here, who knows who Nintex is? Pretty much everybody? That'll make this easy. Good. Dave knows who Nintex is. That's good. So with that, I shall jump into it. So I just want to do a bit of stage setting here, because after all, this is a partner-led session. And for those of you who haven't done these before, you actually get a 57-slide presentation from Microsoft on how to deliver a partner-led presentation. Which is quite a novel experience, because that's more slides than I have in this presentation. However, the focus of that is to encourage me to talk to you about interesting topics, things that are happening in the industry, and avoid pitching my company. And so with that in mind, I'm not here today to pitch my company or my products. Along the way, I may talk about some things, I may show some things for illustrative purposes only, but the focus of today is to share some learnings with you, share some observations along the way, share some examples, some evidence, that we've gleaned from our customer base over time. Hopefully open your eyes to a new way of thinking about workflow and process automation, a way of thinking at a scale that perhaps you haven't imagined before, and at the same time to help you understand the compelling reasons why you should be thinking this way because of some of the obvious things that are happening in society today and perhaps some of the things that are not so obvious to you but may become so in the not too distant future. Hopefully I'll be able to show you how you can adapt your thinking and at the same time, how you can start to look at some of what might be coming in the future along the way. If I achieve that, then that's success for me. Now, if you happen to be using Nintex products, that's fantastic. I'll show you some stuff. I know people like to see what we're up to. And I'll show you some information here, not because I want to talk up the company, but it helps you understand where the information's coming from that I'm about to share with you. So first and foremost, Nintex as a company was founded in Australia in 2006. Now, you might be asking, why is that an interesting piece of information? Well, mostly I'm just highlighting that, first of all, so you understand why some of the people on our booth speak with a strange accent. And second of all, just to be very clear, I'm not Australian, okay? And so if you don't know me, points for figuring out where I am from at the end of this session. Now, we've deployed our software across 6,000 customers worldwide, 90 countries. We do that through a network of 1,600 partners. That means we operate at a significant scale, okay? Now, this isn't 6,000 small businesses. This is 6,000 customers in excess of 500 to 1,000 employees, all the way up to hundreds of thousand employees. And what comes out of that is a scale of process automation that's somewhat unimaginable. And to be honest, a few years back when we lived in the world of on-premise, we didn't actually have a depth of understanding of what was going on out there. But with the advent of the cloud, as we move our technology into Office 365 and beyond, as we go back into our base to try and gain a deeper understanding of what our customers are doing so we can help others, we start to discover a scale that's somewhat off the charts. And as you can see here, we have millions of users worldwide. We run about 1 million workflows deployed every year, which run around about 500 million times. Now, that's a big number. Stop and think about that for a moment and maybe do some math in your head. Think about how many minutes each of these processes saves a person or a company. Think about what they can do with that extra time. Perhaps divide that by 60 minutes in an hour, 24 hours in a day, 365 days in a year. Now, if you're like me, I actually did this calculation in my head. It's about last week I was in bed, and I was working through it because I like to keep the gray matter turning over as I get older. And the number came out. It was somewhat staggering, and I actually had to go get a calculator just to make sure I hadn't made something up because it results in a figure like this. Every month, through workflow automation, we're saving our customers 238 years of productivity, okay? Now, I don't know why all of you got into this industry, but I got into this industry to try and make the world a better place, one piece of software at a time, one person at a time. And this, to me, feels like a fairly compelling statistic, testament to all the work that we do in the company, the work that those 1,600 partners do, and the work that our 6,000 customers do as they embrace this technology and deploy it across their organization. Now, I did think this was a really impressive stat, and then yesterday, Satya started talking about SwiftKey, and he was talking about billions of minutes saved in typing. I'm not sure I can compete with that, but I do think this is probably a higher impact than swiping with your finger instead of using two thumbs. But this is just to set the stage for what I'm about to talk about. So what I want to do is help you understand what we mean when we talk about disruption, because a lot of people have an image in their head of disruption that's perhaps not what I'm going to talk about. A lot of people may be looking at it through one lens or another, so I'll help clarify the two ways we look at this. So let me give you the definition. Disruption, a disturbance or problems that interrupt an event, activity, or a process. Now, these are things that are happening every day, and the frequency of this is increasing with time. Obviously, there's man-made disruption. Obviously, we have natural disruption. You see here some footage from the Hurricane Katrina, a devastating impact on the southern coast of the United States. And you can see here, quote from Dennis McNally, chairman of PwC, in a recent report on surviving disruption. During the past decade, we've seen economic volatility and disruption escalate to arguably unprecedented levels. Risks that once seemed improbable and even remote have become the norm. And in this paper, the point of this discussion is to open people's eyes to the need to think about how they're gearing up for this, because it's no longer something that happens from time to time. Just to give you an example of some of the things that have gone over the last decade: US invasion of Iraq, SARS, global financial crisis, banking sector collapse. Who here had fun during that? Anybody? Not me. Swine flu, Japan and New Zealand earthquakes. So it doesn't just hit big countries, it hits little old countries like New Zealand, places like Christchurch. Japan, we're still suffering from that. On the West Coast, we have the radioactive material coming all the way across to Seattle. More recently, Brexit. Who thinks that was a good idea, by the way? Anybody? Don't want to get too political here, but then you do have this US election thing going on as well. That would help you understand I'm not from America, by the way, and it is interesting to observe this from the outside. But that's not the only form of disruption, because what's happening is we're living in a world where people are out to get you, okay? And this isn't something that was easy to achieve in the past, but what's happened as the world's evolved, as technology has changed, it's become easier and easier for people to compete with mature, established organizations. Companies that once thought they had a moat around their business, that had a war chest to protect themselves from the onslaught of competition, are now struggling to keep up. You can see here just a few examples with Blockbusters, Borders, and Kodak, companies that were once household names that are barely existing anymore. And you can see a change in the average lifespan of a Fortune 500 company has gone from 70 years to 15 during this time. So why is that happening? Well, at the end of the day, the people who are out to disrupt you, they don't play by the same rules. I'll give you some examples here, examples I'm sure you've all heard about. In fact, show of hands, who's used Uber to get to and from the convention center? Yeah, that's a pretty significant telling statistic, right? I came here and one. Did anyone else get the problem where the police shouted at you for you getting out at the wrong place? No? Okay. I got back in because she had a gun, just saying. Uber, world's largest taxi company, owns no taxis. Airbnb, I've changed exclusively to use an Airbnb now when I travel, when I stay, when I'm going places for work, because I get a better quality of accommodation at a more reasonable price, but they own no real estate. Skype, Microsoft acquires one of the largest telcos in the world with no infrastructure, with no regulation applied to them as a result. Numerous other examples in there. These are companies that are changing the rules. In fact, I recall, and it's ironic because I used to work for Microsoft at the time when I had this conversation, but a friend of mine worked in the Windows business, and he once said to me, Apple will never bring down Microsoft. He said, Windows is the dominant operating system. OS X is terrible. Now, I'm going to do a demo on OS X, but I do kind of agree with them. However, I told him back then, this is 2007, I said, Nick, you're missing the point, okay? No one's going to bring down Windows by building Windows in the same way that OpenOffice, does anyone remember OpenOffice was going to bring down Office? Never happened. But what happened is they changed the rules. They gave you a new device, so you didn't need a desktop PC, you didn't need a laptop. At which point, potentially, Windows becomes irrelevant. Now, I don't think that's the case. I have a Surface as well. I quite like it. I like it more than my Mac, but my Mac has longer battery hours, so that's why it's here today. So what's different? Well, fundamentally, the barriers to entry have gone. Used to be, to compete with these kind of businesses, I had to have massive infrastructure. I had to have servers, data centers, facilities. I had to have teams of people running everything. And now, frankly, life's kind of for rent. Okay? I no longer have to acquire all this infrastructure. If I want to start a business to compete, swipe my credit card, buy some services, I go grab one of these hip, trendy office places where I can get a little room by the hour, plug-in, Wi-Fi access, or I can work out of a Starbucks cafe. I'm VP of product. You know, if you're ever in the space of product management, you want to get great research, user feedback, hang out in Starbucks. Just grab someone, show them your product, give them a $5 card, tell you all you want to know about it. They have no pull from the past. These are people who don't have established customers. They don't have to worry about migration. They don't have to worry about business model transformation. They're just plugging ahead. They're coming up with new business models, and they're not afraid to try things, to change things, and to adapt and to evolve. Fundamentally, these are people who believe nothing is impossible. More often than not, this starts with five guys in a dorm room, pop out of nowhere, and start to compete with established players. And nobody is immune from this. Now, you might be thinking, this is a big company problem. But the reality is, it's actually more of a small company problem, because big companies often have deep pockets, and they can survive some of this. They can acquire, they can adapt, they can change themselves, they have more time. But fundamentally, everything these companies do is digital. Everything's automated. They've made a true digital transformation. They're not sending faxes. They're not bouncing emails all around the place. They're sitting in Skype. They're sitting in Slack. They're using tools that they acquire from the cloud. They've got some Salesforce in there. Maybe they're using some Workday and the likes. Everything's just on demand for them. So let me talk to you about some coping mechanisms for this. So the world's changing. Fundamentally, that's the theme here, right? Disruption's all around you, and you have to work out how to cope with that. So here's the first option. This is the one I like to call avoidance. I'll give you some fantastic quotes I've had in my career. First one, I love it. This is from 1997. New Zealand government, it's a CTO. He says to me in a round table where we're talking about the change in collaboration and communication, he says to me, IAM's a compliance nightmare, Ryan. Can't see it ever being allowed in government, ever. And now, what's the primary mechanism of communication for the New Zealand government? They're leveraging Skype to talk to one another, to talk across departments. This next one, this one's a classic. This goes further back, 1995. I met with the CEO of a leading New Zealand clothing manufacturer. Sitting in his little office, he's just getting started, he's trying to build up his brand and his profile. Pretty phenomenal job they've done over these years, but I said to him, I said, Jeremy, what you need is a website. What you need to do is think globally. You're here in New Zealand, you're at the bottom of the world, you need to expand your horizons. And he says to me, I've got great retail partners, Ryan. Can't understand why I'd ever want to sell my clothes on the internet. That's novel. I walked away and I went and found some other customers. And then this one, this is a beauty, a leading analyst firm. We're not expecting to see rapid uptake of Office 365. Don't know how you guys feel about that. When I see the charts in terms of how many of those hundreds of millions of workflows we run in Office 365, it looks like a vertical line, not a hockey stick. It's going off the charts. And that's people just getting started. It's not even coming in full force yet. Avoidance, I think, is a bad strategy. The next one is aggression. Pick a fight. Taxi companies, I know. We'll use regulations. We'll talk to the politicians. We'll figure out a way to stop this Uber and Lyft thing in our city. Doesn't seem to be going so well. Cities and hotel chains trying to block Airbnb. Still not going so well. Yeah, these things need more regulation for sure, but we need to change the established mindset. This most recent one, right? State of Michigan trying to stop Tesla selling direct. Have some really, really strange policies in this country around how you can sell cars that go back to the 1930s. The world's changed a bit since then. So I think fighting it out, probably not a good strategy. Strategy three, my favorite one, acceptance. This is the world we live in now. Things have changed. Things are different. Wake up. Cope with it, deal with it, accept it. For us, we believe process is at the heart of a transformation that everyone needs to go on in order to survive and thrive in this new economy. You can see a couple of quotes here from leading analysts. Real returns come from seizing the opportunity to remake business processes. Because fundamentally, if you focus on process, if you focus on efficiency, you can free your people up for higher value tasks. With that, I'll give you a phenomenal quote. This is from a book called Extreme Ownership from two ex-Navy SEALs. If you haven't read this, I highly recommend it. The more disciplined standard operating procedures a team employs, the more freedom they have. And thus, they can execute faster, sharper, and more efficiently. Now, what they were saying is in this Navy SEAL unit, they already had standard operating procedures, but they took it to a whole new level. Everything they did was documented. Everything was regimented. Everything was followed to the letter. And that didn't inhibit them. That didn't stop them from achieving things. That actually freed them up to focus on the higher value problems so that they knew when they were in combat situations that all the basics were taken care of and they could focus on solving the problems as they unrolled in front of them, because their competition, the opposition, didn't play by the rules. So let me introduce you to a new way of thinking. It's called survive then thrive. And it's based on Maslow's hierarchy of needs. Show of hands if you're familiar with this. I imagine most people have kind of heard of it. I have a degree in psychology for my troubles, and so I spent a lot of time looking at this. Ultimately, Maslow theorized that to realize your full potential, you must first take care of the essentials. Taking care of food, taking care of shelter, supporting family, taking care of your personal safety. Those were the things you had to have in place if you were to focus on realizing your true potential as a human being. And if you focused on the true potential first, all of these other things would catch up with you. Now, when we apply this to the world of automation, we like to encourage our customers and through our partners to think about starting with the basics. Start at the bottom of the food chain, all those manual processes that exist in your organization, going on every single day, thousands and thousands of processes where emails are getting bounced around, people are picking up the phone, it's happening in a different way every time, there's a lack of predictability, there's a lack of compliance. It's a fertile ground for finding problems to solve quickly, easily, rapid ROI. From there, you can start to move up to more of your operational processes, the higher value processes in your organization, until finally you can focus on the strategic processes, the things that drive your business every day. And when you do this, when you take care of things from the bottom up, just like the Navy SEALs, you free your people up to achieve their best, to realize their full potential in your organization, to do the thing you actually pay them to do, not to deal with all the minutiae of your organization every day. So with that, let me compare the old way versus the new way of thinking. Now, some of you may have heard of the old way. It's kind of called BPM, Business Process Management. Hard-coded programming, workflows into apps. It was rigid, it was fixed. You needed sophisticated resources, you needed a lot of them. You had to pay consulting bills, you had to buy a lot of software, servers, racks. And the return on investment, it was years that we were measuring in. And so as a result, you started to focus on those higher value processes because you felt like you had to do that to justify what you were spending. And you convinced yourself that perhaps over time, well, maybe we can tackle a few more. I'll give you a great example. A leading retail chain here in the US went down this path. After about 6 years, they'd achieved 5 workflows automated in their business. After 6 months of approaching things through this new mindset, 768 processes automated. And that's a pretty compelling turnaround. So you're starting to look at measuring this in weeks, not months or years. You're starting to look for ways to quickly adapt, to be agile, to change your processes as your business needs change. You're not trying to take a centralized approach, push a way of working down on people. You're empowering them to figure out how to solve their own problems. And it's visual, it's drag and drop, it's quick and it's easy. That's the way to succeed. That's the new way versus the old way of doing things. With that, I'd like to give you a quick example. One of our customers who took this approach, solved their problems, made a transformation in their business that was dramatic in a very short period of time, roughly about 6 weeks for time to value from this project. So Mitchells and Butlers, it's a pub and restaurant chain in the UK. They have about 1,600 facilities around the country. And what used to happen is every day, people in those facilities would go around carrying out checks, health and safety inspections. Maybe you're looking at the cleanliness of the toilets. Maybe you're looking at the temperature of the pot roast. Perhaps you're checking out the refrigerator. And what was happening was they were getting latent data into the organization. These people were walking around with clipboards, filling in bits of paper, taking them back to the head office, sending them down to London. Someone was keying all the data in, running reports at the end of the month, discovering problems. Now, the problems were health and safety problems, foodborne illness type problems. And that causes issues. People get sick. It's not good for the brand, not good for the reputation. Within a very short period of time, they were able to turn that around, mobilize everything, every single form in their organization, to the point where people were filling them in, online, offline, whether they're down in the basement, in the refrigerator, coverage, no coverage, pushing the data back in real time dashboards, real time alerting, threshold monitoring, and then responding immediately if there were problems. As a result, you can see here a massive saving financially, but also a saving to the brand, to the reputation, to the leaders of the organization. And that encourages more people to come back, to trust the organization, to want to eat and drink at the facilities. So with that, what I'd like to do is just take a moment to give you a short demo to show you how to achieve this concept of empowering the masses. Because at the end of the day, to do that, you need to make software that's quick, that's easy, that's intuitive. So what I want to do is just give you a quick demonstration of something that we announced last week called the Nintex Workflow Cloud. Now, the Nintex Workflow Cloud is an evolution of what we've been doing over the last 10 years at Nintex, and it's about bringing our technology out of the world of SharePoint and Office 365 and opening up to a whole new set of problems, a whole new set of opportunities, challenges that we can solve that we could never solve before. Now, as you can see, we've done a pretty good job of solving a lot of problems, 500 million processes running every year, just in the world of SharePoint and Office 365 alone. So imagine what would happen if you opened that up to Dynamics, CRM, GP, AX. Imagine what would happen if you applied that technology to your own custom .NET projects, mobile application development, desktop development. Or perhaps you're applying it to technologies beyond the realms of Microsoft. Maybe you're looking at other cloud providers, folks like Salesforce, Workday, NetSuite, and the likes, connecting CRM with ERP, with ECM systems. So let me give you a quick show and tell of what's possible in this new environment if you focus on simple and easy. So I'm just going to create a little working workflow for us, very rudimentary, but just to try and get across the point of what's possible if you empower the everyday person to solve their problems. So I've opened up a new workflow. I'm just going to go over to the start event. Now, this is where I configure what it is that triggers this workflow. And in this case, well, I want a quick mobile application because I'm here at Ignite, and I'm going to be meeting with a lot of customers and partners. And what I'd like to be able to do is capture details on contacts that I meet, create opportunities, and track leads. So I'm going to go create an Nintex mobile application and capture some information. I think I'll capture first name. We might capture last name. What else might be useful information? Probably want an email address. We'll add a company. And we might just get a little crazy. Maybe we'll go and add something like location. We'll capture some GPS coordinates. And I'll just do a little quick trick there because this is an advanced preview. And we'll close that. And then I'm going to make this workflow do something. So I've configured what starts it. You'll see this in a minute. It's a mobile application. First thing I'm going to do is just drag on a little email here. So when I meet someone, I'm going to capture their details into the mobile application, send them a quick email. So I'll drop over here to send email. And we'll just say, okay, we want to send that to the person that I met with. Well, I'll just grab their email address from my variables. And the subject is going to say, great to meet you at Ignite. And the message body says, fantastic discussion and look forward to catching up. And we'll just go ahead and we'll put in their name there. So we'll just say first name. We'll insert that. And that'll give us an email. And then we'll say, regards, Ryan. And we might do a couple of other things here. Now, what I like to do is notify my boss about this, that I've had an interesting meeting with someone. So I'm going to send him a text message. So he's sitting here in the audience. But rather than worry about whether or not his phone's going to work for this, I'll just have it sent to my phone. So we'll just use my Twilio account. Some of you may have heard of Twilio. They IPO'd recently. So I'll just put in my phone number. If anyone wants to call me sometime, feel free to grab this, write it down. If you've got any questions, message will say, just uncovered a great opportunity with, and we'll say first name, last name, so he knows who I met with. We'll insert that, make that nice and easy. And the last thing I'm going to do is I'm going to go into my Salesforce account, I'm going to create a record because I want to be able to track this. So we'll go in, we'll just pick a connection to Salesforce. It's going to load up all the objects that are in the Salesforce environment. I'm going to open that up and I'm going to create a lead. So if I scroll down my list here, we will see lead. It's going to go ahead and it's going to look at what a lead looks like in my organization because everybody's CRM deployment is different. You'll see it requires a company and a last name, but I'm just going to add a few other bits and pieces of information. So we'll put in the email address and we'll add in the first name as well. That'd be a useful piece of information. So we'll drop that in there. So the company, well, I picked that up in my form. So we'll go ahead and we'll click on company. We'll insert that. Last name. We'll grab the last name from the form as well. Email address, same process, and finally, we'll add in the first name. And with that, we have ourselves a workflow that's ready to fire. So I'll go ahead and publish this workflow. Give it a name, Ignite Lead Capture, and we'll publish that. We'll give it a brief moment, and as that's publishing, it'll tell us it's successful. We're going to cut across to my iPhone. So what I'm going to do now is show you the Nintex mobile application. Log into this. You should see it on the screen in just a moment. And I'm going to swipe down on this application. It's going to go ahead and communicate with the server, and it's going to get an update. And you'll see it's added this Ignite lead capture application. So first name, we'll say, who did we meet with? Let's see. We'll put in Alex. We'll put in asked. Let's try that again. This is the Swift key stuff not doing its job. Burton. Byron. Alex Burton. There we go. And his address is, just so you know, this is one of my colleagues. You can capture it. If you've got any problems with our SharePoint products, this is the guy you want to talk to. Alex Burton at Nintex. Everybody's laughing. If you don't know, he's the guy down there who's laughing. There you go. See him at the end of the session. Alex Unbutton. Oh, there we go. That's why you were laughing. Okay, let's do that again. Alex. This is now SwiftKey taking back time from me. Come on. Alex Burton. Company, he's from Nintex. And location, I'll take the little target there and grab that information. I'm going to submit that form. That's now going to get sent through to the server. And if I pop back over to my screen, a few things will start to happen. So just jump back over and we'll go track what this workflow is up to. And we'll go ahead and take a look at the workflow. And you'll see it started to kick off. So the first thing it's done is it sent out that email. We'll be able to see that in my inbox. We'll be able to see it in Alex's inbox, hopefully, because I was telling him that I'd meet one. It's going to send a text message to me via SMS. If this hasn't beeped yet, it should do in a minute. Reception can be a bit funny down here. And then the last thing it's going to do is go ahead and update that opportunity. And oh, no, it's going to fail sending a text message. It's not a valid phone number. 42578. Ah, missed a number. Okay, well, never mind. Demos fail sometimes. So what you would have seen is it would have, and by the way, there have been quite a few demo failures in this conference so far. What you would have seen is it sends a text message to me, and then it goes ahead and updates Salesforce opportunity. I need to do a bit of error handling in there to figure out what to do with those phone numbers as I go. With that, I will jump back to the presentation. So talk to you a little bit about how to think about the world. What I want to do now is give you a model to follow in terms of how to evolve and how to adapt, a place to start, and a destination to end up at. And so with that, I'd like to introduce you to our process maturity model. Now, this is a nice four-stage approach that helps you figure out where to start, how to start simple. Now, in stage one, and this is often what we see, company has a problem. Someone turns up to IT and says, hey, I'm struggling. Usually someone like HR have a problem with employee lifecycle management. You're going to turn up to IT and say, can we solve that? Now, IT is going to do what IT normally does. They're going to say, no, we're too busy. Not because IT are bad people, it's just reality. IT have a big backlog of stuff. It happens even in Nintex. I go to my IT guys, can you do this? Well, is it more important than our Salesforce migration? Probably not. Is it more important than the new website? Probably not. Is it more important than the DevOps stuff we're doing to get your new platform working in the cloud? No, probably not. Okay, well, go do it yourself. Or if you have some budget, call a partner. So as you can see here, very project-centric, typically IT-led if they've got time, flexibility, otherwise partner-led. Limited deployment, controlled access. Okay, Ryan, we're going to build this thing for you, but that's about it. Now, then what happens is I get quite excited about this. So I want more, and I go tell my friends about it in the organization. And all of a sudden, this little shadow IT thing starts to happen. Because in every organization, there's someone, give them a name, maybe you call them business unit IT, maybe call them power user, maybe a business analyst, maybe macro boy, person that used to do all the Excel stuff for you. They start getting a hold of this technology and saying, hey, we can solve more problems with this. Organic growth happens, right? Now, as you see in the heading here, we like to talk about this as landing tactically, expanding organically, and then landing with a purpose. Now, for a lot of people, they would say, oh, uncontrolled organic growth of a product, that's a bad thing. Not a bad thing. It's worked really well for a lot of products and a lot of companies. But you have to keep an eye on it as it's happening. Because otherwise, things can get a little wacky. I'll give you an interesting conversation I had. A CIO of a company that we deal with, out of the blue, calls up. Looking to migrate to Office 365. Good. That's a good sign. We like that. Been taking a look at my environment. Tell me more. He says, so I have 12,000 workflows. Okay. Now, at this point, this could either be a good or a bad conversation. I don't know, right? The guy says, it's awesome. Solving so many problems in my business. Thanks so much. However, it would be nice to know more about what's going on. This conversation happened a while back. It led to a product we built called Hawkeye to give people insights into what's happening in their environment. But at this point in time, organic growth, a bit of ad hoc training, maybe someone goes on an Intex course, maybe they learn a bit, read some books about process automation, and they're kind of still supported by IT because they'll ring up when they've got problems. If there's any challenges, they'll escalate things quite quickly. And that's the point where you need to start to take control of what's going on in the organization. That's when you move to stage three, a more formal rollout. Start to build up a center of excellence. Get some structured training in place for people. Really fascinating thing, we've come across a number of customers recently where the scale of this is off the charts. Talk to one customer who has 1,000 people in their organization trained to solve their own problems with our workflow platform. 1,000 people. And they said, hey, we noticed you have all this learning material online. Can we have our own copy of it so we can run our own training program internally? Absolutely. Go right ahead. Why? Because the more you build, the better off it is for me. You start to curate workflows. You start to look for common patterns, practices. You start to encourage reuse within your organization. You start to get groups of people together, talk about what they're doing. See if you can't reduce that number. Because odds are, at 12,000 workflows, there's probably some replication of things going on in there. Now, I would caution you at this point, because the experts in the industry, process excellence engineers would tell you, 12,000 workflows, Ryan, that's out of control. You need to get everybody together. You need to centralize this, and you need to come up with the one workflow to rule them all. And that results in pretty unwieldy workflows that can never be managed or touched over time. What happens is that every single one of these workflows, while some of them are often similar to others, there's little nuances to it. This one was done by a group in this office, that office, slightly different requirements. This subsidiary versus that subsidiary, this geo versus that geo, country versus country, city versus city. Different rules, different regulations apply. So you can't solve everyone's problem the exact same way. And if you sit and you try and come up with a master plan, and you try to come up with all the business rules to apply to all these people, then over time, what's going to happen is something you just can't adapt, something that's not flexible. And by the way, the time it took you to develop all of that, you could have just solved your problems and moved on. But this is the point where you're starting to curate, you're starting to look at managing your inventory. And then you move on to the hallowed ground, stage four. This is where you're starting to think about process portfolio management. You're starting to look through a different lens at what you're doing. You're starting to try to understand the ROI that you're getting from this, the true ROI. Now, I throw around these big numbers, statistics, hundreds of years of hours saved every month. That's great, but it doesn't tell you what people were doing with that time. It doesn't give you insights into the actual process and the impact that it was having on your business. Because when you go viral like this, people tend to just solve the problems and say, binary, done, not done, solved, not solved. When you start to look at it from a more mature perspective, you ask yourself, what is this process doing? What did it look like before? What could it look like in the future if I applied a little more creative thinking to it? You start to come up with a roadmap, priorities. You start to invest based on that ROI that you're seeing. And ultimately, you start to benchmark and improve. Benchmark within your own organization, benchmark across other organizations that are out there. Maybe in a similar field to you, maybe in different fields. Maybe you're benchmarking across business functions versus industry. That leads you to a point where the results might surprise you. So I mentioned 12,000 workflows. We thought that was a pretty big number. And then recently, about maybe 4 weeks or so ago, we discovered a customer with 30,000 workflows. Now, I assume everyone here knows something about SharePoint, right? Hope so, yeah. So there is a unique aspect to this, but again, it plays to what I was just talking about before. How did they get to 30,000 workflows? Because they have a standard set of operating procedures that they stamp out across their environment. But it's a big environment, it's a global environment. And for every site that they stand up, someone's taking the workflows, the templates, they're tweaking them, they're tuning them, they're adapting them to their own needs, they're adding their own. And that's how they got to this kind of scale. And if you do that, if you trust in the process, you allow that to solve the problems in your business, then the world becomes a much happier place for you. That reaches the point of self-actualization, the peak of Maslow's hierarchy of needs. At that point in time, you're starting to think about your workflows in a whole new way. You're starting to think about what they can do for your business. How can you reuse these workflows? How can you rationalize things? How can you share best practices? Build up an exchange where people can easily build entire workflows, entire processes, fragments of processes, share them with other people, other colleagues within the organization. You get to the point where you can not only reuse them within your organization, but you can start to think about how you can share IP across organizational boundaries. Now, maybe that's within different business units that have pretty strict controls over how they talk to one another due to regulations. Maybe it's around issues of data sovereignty. You can start to figure out how you might be able to share your intellectual property out to monetize it through other customers. As a partner who's building up a book of intellectual property, you can figure out how you can sell that intellectual property to multiple customers multiple times. And ultimately, you start to work out how you can embed these processes in every aspect of your business. Embed them into your own third-party applications. Embed them into those custom .NET applications, web applications, mobile applications, and the likes. Because ultimately, you're looking at these workflows more as a service than as a product or some kind of platform or some kind of offering. You're consuming them as you need them, talking to the platform. You're asking, hey, what can you do for me? How can I execute those workflows? And what information can you give me in return? What outcomes can you help me achieve? So with that, with a focus on that idea of insights, on that idea of understanding things more, another short demo of what we've been up to recently that can help you get to this point on your journey. And so what we'll do is we'll look at a platform that we call Hawkeye. Now, Hawkeye is about getting deeper insights into what's going on in your environment. It can give you the basics, usage patterns, inventory, how many times are workflows running, who's running them, which ones are failing, which ones are succeeding. It would pick up on that demo that I did earlier. That one was a failure. And it's going to start to give you a deeper level of understanding. What it allows you to do is ingest all the information about the processes you're running, give you some baseline understanding, but then allow you to mark it up to apply more intelligence, to gain that deeper knowledge of what the workflow is actually doing for you. So in this example here, we're looking at an analysis of contract management within an organization. This is an organization that's got a legal department, and you're going to see a lot of red things in here because that's going to tell me my legal department's not particularly effective. What we're doing is we're looking right now at a global view of all the contracts being created. I can easily drill down into any of these areas, like Seattle here. I can start to see how many contracts I've got being created in there if I hover over it. 21 contracts, I can see the average time to generation of those contracts is 16 days. Now, the reason Seattle's looking red is because I've set an SLA in this workflow of 15 days. There's my workflow doing what it was supposed to do finally. That's a good thing. And so you'll see that I've got 21 days there, so that's in excess of my SLAs. And I can drill down and start to find out more about what's going on. So I can look at an overview by amount, by transactional volume. So how many contracts have I got? What stage of review are they in? Because what we've done is we've gone through and we've marked up the workflow model to help people understand not just, hey, this is a contract review workflow, but this is what's happening in each stage. This is where we're in a draft. This is where we're in a legal review cycle, all the way down to sending the contract to the customer, the redlining process, and then completion. So it gives me a very rapid way to be able to drill down and gain more insights into what's going on and ultimately be able to solve the problems that I'm seeing in my organization. More importantly, though, what we're able to do is set some ROI metrics. So what I can do is I can look at how many times this workflow is running, I can look at how sophisticated this workflow is, and I can apply some of my metrics to it to understand what kind of savings I'm seeing in the business. So as someone sitting in the C-suite, this gives me a unique insight into the value of my investment in building up these workflows. And so you'll see here I have a total ROI of $58,000. Some of that comes from IT productivity, some of that comes from end user productivity gains, and then ultimately, a bunch of this comes from developer costs saved. Because what we've done is we've taken all this insight that we've gained as a company, we've worked with leading analyst firm, Forrester, to build up a total economic impact study, and we put that in here as a baseline. So we can start to take that information and understand how many hours are we saving versus building a custom workflow in .NET, versus using a tool like SharePoint Designer. So we're able to put all that information together to help you understand the benefit you're getting and to help you unlock the purse to invest more in the platform. So with that, I want to give you an idea of how to uncover the opportunity. So I'm talking about thousands and thousands of processes here. How do you go about finding those? How do you uncover those stones and understand what you can achieve in your organization? I'll give you a lens to think about this through. It's what we call the four P's. People, product, profit. Got my CEO and CFO in the back here, by the way, just so you know that's why the profit part's in there. Through process, more importantly, right? That's where the four P's come from. So let's talk a little bit about people, because ultimately, when folks think about process automation, they tend to go right to the profit aspect of things. Process automation historically has been about how lean I can be as an organization. How much cost can I cut out of my business? If I keep cutting costs, can I reduce my workforce? Can I make myself more profitable that way? Now, I'd like to introduce the notion that fundamentally, there are finite gains from doing that. If you focus on other aspects of your business, I'm not going to say there's infinite gains, but there's certainly less of a cap on the potential. So if you start by focusing on people, now what am I talking about here? I'm talking about your employees. I'm talking about your customers, your partners, stakeholders in the wider community. When you focus on those people, then you start to be able to achieve more. Focus on your employees, make their lives easier, give them those standard operating procedures, free them up to higher value tasks. That's going to generate a higher level of satisfaction, greater level of productivity. The statistics out there are clear on this. Happier employee, greater productivity. They're going to engage with your customers more effectively. Greater engagement with customers, happier customers. You're going to retain your customers. You're going to acquire new customers. Your brand is going to be promoted as a result of this. Your partners, for us, that's key to our success. If I focus on our partners all the time, they go out and they sell the product for me. I don't even have to have sales guys. Kind of have to have people to support them. That's why we have a chief revenue officer too. Then you focus on the wider community, the impact you're having as a stakeholder, as a citizen, how much you can give back to the community because of what you're achieving as an organization. From there, you start to look at your product or your service offering. Because fundamentally, in this world of disruption, you have to be more competitive. You have to be more agile, more responsive to change. Take the world of software that we're in. One day, it was happy world. We had SharePoint on-premise. We packaged up Box software, went about our business, shipped out an MSI. 3 years later, did the same. Kept in lockstep with Microsoft. And then came Office 365. Changes on a pretty frequent basis if you're paying attention to it. Then we move out into the world of the cloud, and we have to push out our own innovation. Daily, weekly, monthly, constant change going on in the platform. So we have to be efficient. We have to drive a rapid pace of innovation. We do that by taking care of the processes. And then we can focus on the profit. We can start to become lean. We can start to cut our operational expenses. We can start to redirect our resources to these earlier, higher value tasks. All of this through process automation. So to give you just a sample of some of the things you can achieve as we curate across our customer base, these are your top five processes across all six departments. Not going to read them all out, but you guys will be able to download these slides and get an idea. You can come on down and talk to us. We can show you examples of some of what's possible here. But these are the what I call the low-hanging fruit, the easy wins. And then you can go all the way from places like this to starting to look at unique industry verticals and the things they're trying to achieve. At the high end of the scale, we have customers in the pharmaceutical space who use our platform to manage FDA drug trial approvals. Now, these are processes that can span 1, 2, 3 years. And every day that they can accelerate a drug getting to market means tens of millions of dollars of increased revenue for them. So it's a pretty compelling reason for them to invest in this kind of process automation. But this gives you an idea of the places that you can start. And to give you a couple of examples of this in action, LinkedIn is a starting position. Now, some of you may have heard of LinkedIn. Recent acquisitions, a pretty big number. Not sure I'd have paid that much for it, but I can understand what they're trying to achieve with it. Now, LinkedIn was able to leverage our platform, our technology. Now, this isn't just workflow, but this is workflow and content automation. Some of you may have heard that a year ago we acquired a document assembly company called Drawloop. And with the combination of Drawloop and Nintex workflow, LinkedIn is able to automate quote generation and contracts for their entire customer base. And you can see now we've gone from a small deployment to a point where a third of the employees use the product. And you can see as a result, they've managed to automate the entire process. Huge efficiency saving for them. Alongside that, ANZ Bank. Now this one was fascinating. I don't know how many people have actually paid attention in a bank if you try to open up an account. If you ever try to get a mortgage here in the US, that's a whole nother game. But this was a bank that was down in Asia Pacific region where everything was paper. Filling in forms, sending them around, scanning them, fixing up errors, and it was taking weeks just to open accounts. For commercial customers, even longer. And they were able to go in, automate the entire process, put in tablet-based applications that would drive the workflows, and you can see as a result now they can get a credit line in less than a week, and retail customers can open an account in less than a day. Pretty big savings for the organization, massive increase in customer satisfaction. Nobody likes sitting around dealing with banks. especially if it's Wells Fargo and they're doubling your accounts on you. Now, whew, did I say that? First the US elections, now Wells Fargo. That's called being current with your presentation. So what I want to do now, I've talked to you a little bit about how to think about the world, why you need to be concerned about this disruption, how to position yourself best to handle it. Because if your house is in order, then when Murphy's Law hits, anything can happen, will happen, and usually at the most inopportune moment, you're at least the most prepared you're ever going to be to address that. What I want to do now is take a little bit of a look into the future. Some of this is way, way future, some of it not so future. In fact, I'll give you an example of something that's happening right in the here and now. So the first thing, anyone know what this is? Someone yell it out. Raspberry Pi. All right. Version 1 or version 2? It's 2. So this is representative of Internet of Things, right? Tiny, tiny little computers with a lot of power in them, with an intimate connection to everything that's going on in the organization. If you're listening to Satya, he talked about 5 billion devices spinning out there every year with brand new IP addresses all talking to one another. Now, the interesting thing in this space is everyone's obsessed right now, for some strange reason, with all these little devices talking to one another, little automated things having conversations. Now, I think there's more interesting things you can do there. Now, I am into the things talking to one another from my phone right now if I wanted to. It'd be novel, I'm not going to do it, but I could start turning the lights on and off in my house and scare my wife. I could even go into my house and say, hey, Alexa, can you turn on the coffee machine? Turns on. It's because I'm a bit of a geek at heart. But what's more interesting to me and the world that we play in is how you can start to take the data from these devices, either individual devices or an aggregate, and leverage it to drive processes. Because 9 times out of 10, when a sensor goes off, nobody really cares, right? One little door opens, no big deal. But what if the door opens and someone walks through the wrong way and it's after 7 o'clock at night and we're starting to do complex event processing? Because that's a signal that I'm interested in. Or maybe I've got one temperature sensor out, not a big deal, but it's out for 3 days and now a second one's out. That's an event I might be interested in. Now, what do you think happens at that point in time? Because if anybody was paying attention yesterday, I don't know if you noticed it, but Skynet lit up, right? You see that? FPGA processors, neural networks, that's a little bit scary. However, what gets interesting is that someone has to get off their ass and do something. And that's what workflow and process automation is all about. It's all about moving information around, getting information to people, helping people make smart decisions, fast decisions, more effective decisions in less time. So when that sensor goes off and someone's walking through the door and it's after 7 p.m. at night, you probably want to notify a security guard and have them come check it out. Once they check it out, if they say, hey, no big deal, everything's okay, it was Ryan, he was going in to prepare for his session, great, update the logs, update the systems, reset the sensors, go back about your business. So the IoT, to me, offers phenomenal opportunity. You know, if you're thinking 500 million workflows running every year right now, when these 5 billion devices come online, that's going to go off the charts. Someone's going to be able to have to deal with all of that. If you want to see this in action, come find Dan Stoll sitting down here on our booth, and he can show you. We have Raspberry Pi hooked up running workflows based on temperature sensors real time on our booth. So it's a little bit futuristic, but a little bit here and now as well. Next up, hey Cortana. I'd like to go and leave. I'd like to go and leave for a month because I'm shipping a product soon and I need a break. Can you let my boss know about that? Can you see if he can approve it for me? That's my boss, Alan, sitting down there. He's about to approve that leave. Now, that might be a little bit imaginative. I'm not 100% convinced yet on talking to computers to start things. I think sometimes there are easier ways of doing it, but interacting with things. Here's a fascinating one. Driving my car to work, pull up at the stoplight. Hey, Cortana. Do I have any tasks that I need to deal with today? Absolutely, Ryan. You need to approve your team's expenses. They've just gone to Ignite. Ugh, how much have they spent? $10,000. Okay. Yeah, let's approve that. No problem at all. Light goes green, drive my car off, right? But now, what happens when you start to leverage some of the machine learning, some of the predictive analytics that come from that? Hey, Ryan, some expenses there. Josh and your team. He's $9,000 of the $10,000 expenses. Are you sure that's right? Average spend for the rest of the Nintex employees there was under $500. What was Josh doing? Hey, give me more information about that. Well, it turns out for the last 3 conferences that Josh has been to, he typically spends about $9,000, and it would seem that about 80% of that comes from Best Buy. Josh has a nice television set at home. Nice home stereo system, right? This is the stuff that we're starting to explore, because when you can take natural language processing, you can take voice recognition, pair that up, you start to get the intent out of what someone's saying, you start to apply that to the machine learning, now you get some really interesting ways of interacting with processes in your organization, much faster ways of interacting, much more natural ways of interacting with processes in your organization. Next up, NFL fantasy football bot. Now, the feedback I gave, I actually had this unique opportunity. I got to see the entire keynote that you guys saw yesterday on Thursday, which was fascinating. And as I did that, when Satya came off stage at the dress rehearsal, he sat beside me and I was like, can I take a selfie with Satya? But that was inappropriate, so I didn't do that. However, when we were going through this, I was having to say to them, hey, you know, not everybody at this conference is American, so they might not get this whole weird fantasy football thing, because I certainly don't quite understand it. It's having we imaginary friends with imaginary teams. However, this notion of conversational UI is fascinating to us. Conversational UI gives you a fantastic new way of interacting with systems. Again, a natural way in certain circumstances. A lot of times when you're dealing with organizations, to be honest, you just don't want to talk to a real person unless you do, right? That was the fascinating part, I thought, yesterday in the demonstration that Satya gave with Microsoft's internal help desk support. Because sooner or later, after it says, hey, Ryan, have you tried this? Have you tried Control-Alt-Delete? Have you tried turning it on and off? Have you tried installing the new hardware driver? To be honest, I know what I'm doing with computers. I've tried all of that. Can I just talk to a person who might have a clue? Because I think you've run out of your knowledge base articles for me. Right? But being able to take this technology and apply it to workflow, something that our partners have already been doing, so that when you have tasks, it's going to reach out to you through a mechanism that makes sense. Maybe you're in Slack. Maybe you're in Yammer. I don't know if anyone's in Yammer, but maybe you are. Maybe you're in your Skype groups. Maybe you're using Skype for Business. It's reaching out, it's talking to you, and it's giving you more intelligent ways of interacting with the system. It's giving you choices, giving you options, making them visual for you, so you can interact with that system and then go about your business. So we think there's huge potential here as people start to explore and unlock what's possible with the conversational interaction with the bot frameworks that are out there. I think the Microsoft bot framework's fantastic. Slack stuff's really impressive as well. And if you haven't looked at it, I encourage you to do so. Now, next up, walking around with the lens on building workflows, right? Strangely enough, one of our co-founders has one of these and has actually done that. Which is kind of geeky. However, that's not really what we're thinking about with this. It is possible, and in that space, we do look at things like HoloLens, and we look at things like the Surface device, now the big Surface device, not the little Surface device, in terms of collaborative interaction, people working on processes together, maybe in the same location, maybe across multiple locations, because otherwise you're all crowding around one little screen. So we think this opens up a new range of possibilities, but what's more interesting is when you start to leverage this in a real-world situation. And so what we have is an example with a partner of ours based out of the Netherlands. Partner's called Sparked. And this is an early stage proof of concept right now, but they're working with the Dutch National Museum to make life much easier for people to walk around and look at all the pieces, all the assets that they have within their organization, be able to figure out the logistics behind it. Because what happens in any museum is they have a lot of things on display, a lot of things in public, but they have a lot of things that are going into the back office and they're having to move them in and out. They're shipping them around different museums, they're sending them out on loan, and they have to be able to track this. And they're leveraging HoloLens to be able to track these assets and in real time capture that data and push it through to workflows. The workflows are updating all the back-end systems that are doing the inventory management for them. And then finally this one, Skynet FPGA. Now, I just learned about this on Thursday, right? So haven't quite figured this one out yet in our product roadmap. But if any of you have ideas out there about massive parallel scale workflow processing, please come and see me because it's pretty impressive. I know it could certainly help the workflows execute a lot faster, so I'm going to try to figure out how we can use that pure compute power. And I'm sure it'll drive the cost of compute power down, so my Azure spend as a VP of product is going to get a lot lower, I'm sure, as a result of this. But it starts to give you a bit of an idea of what might be possible as we move forward. And so with that, I want to close up. I want to talk about the fact that the world's changing. That's the point of this, right? Things are different now than they used to be, and you need to adapt, you need to evolve with that, because the world is not going to wait for you to catch up. But if you're thinking the world's changing, let's scratch that. The reality is, the world has already changed. Time to act is now. Murphy's Law tells us that things can go wrong, will go wrong, someone is out to disrupt your business. You need to adapt, you need to be able to cope with that. The only way to be prepared for this is to embrace a true digital transformation, to focus on automating everything in your business. Not just those high-end strategic processes, but everything from the ground up. Start at the bottom, build your way up, get strategic, build your way back down again. Bottoms up, top down, work them both at the same time. The way you embrace this transformation is to look at workflow and content automation. That's where you can achieve true scale. That's where you can hit these numbers like 30,000 processes automated in your organization. And with that, I want to thank you for your time. If you enjoyed this, if you'd like to learn more, come on down to the Nintex booth. We're at booth number 1510. You can see the Raspberry Pi in action. We can talk to you more about that HoloLens stuff, see some of these new technologies in action. Thank you very much for your time.